Chapter 56. The detective rammed through the hatch like a pile driver. His boots smashed down on O'Shea's shoulders. The spy lost his grip on the rudders. Hurtled into the control room below, he sprawled on the deck. Bell landed on his feet. The stench of bleach, poisonous chlorine gas mixed from saltwater leaks and battery acid, burned his nostrils and stung his eyes. Half-blinded, he caught a blurry glimpse of a cramped space, a fraction of a boxing ring with a curved ribbed ceiling so low he had to crouch and walled in by bulkheads bristling with piping, valves, and gauges. O'Shea leaped up and charged. Isaac Bell met the spy with a hard right. O'Shea blocked it and counterpunched, landing a fist that knocked the tall detective sideways. Bell slammed into the bulkhead, seared his arm on a white-hot pipe, bounced off the sharp rim of a rudder indicator, raked his scalp on the compass protruding from the ceiling, and threw another right. The spy blocked him again with a left arm as strong as it was quick and blasted back with a counterpunch deadlier than the first. It caught Bell in his ribs with the force to hurl him back against the hot pipes. His boots skidded on the wet deck, and he fell. The stink of chlorine was much stronger low down, the gas being heavier than air, and as Bell inhaled it, he felt a burning pain in his throat and the sensation that he was suffocating. He heard O'Shea grunt with effort. The spy was launching a kick at his head. Bell dodged all but the man's heel, which tore across his temple and rolled to his feet. Gasping to draw breaths of marginally cleaner air, he circled the spy. They were more evenly matched than Bell had supposed. He had a longer reach, but O'Shea was easily as strong as he and as fast. Bell's extra height was a distinct disadvantage in the confined space. Again he threw a right, a feint this time, and when O'Shea executed another lightning-fast block and counterpunch, the tall detective was ready to hit him with a powerful left that rocked the spy's head back. "Lucky hit," O'Shea taunted. "Counterpunching is all you ever learned in Hell's Kitchen," Bell shot back. "Not all," said O'Shea. He slipped his thumb into his vest and brought it out again, armed with a razor-sharp stainless steel eye gouge. Bell moved in, throwing combinations. He landed most, but it was like punching a heavy workout bag. O'Shea never staggered, but merely absorbed the powerhouse blows while he waited for his chance. When it came, he took it, sinking a gut-wrenching blow into Bell's body. It doubled the detective over. Before Bell could pull back, O'Shea closed in on him with blinding speed and circled his neck with his powerful right arm. Isaac Bell found himself trapped in a headlock. His left arm was pinned between their bodies. With his right, he tried to reach the knife in his boot, but O'Shea's thumb gouge was arced toward his eye. Bell surrendered all thoughts of his knife and seized O'Shea's wrist. He realized instantly that he had never grappled with a stronger man. Even as he held his wrist with all his might, O'Shea forced the razor-sharp gouge closer and closer to Bell's face until it pierced the skin and began crawling across his cheek, plowing a fine red furrow toward his eye. All the while, O'Shea's right arm was squeezing harder and harder around his throat, cutting off air to his burning lungs and blood to his brain. He heard a roaring in his ears. White flashes stormed before his eyes. His sight began to fade. His grip on O'Shea's wrist loosened. He tried to free his left arm. O'Shea shifted slightly to keep it pinned. Head trapped, bent low, Bell suddenly saw that he was now partially behind O'Shea. He slammed his knee into the back of O'Shea's knee. It buckled. O'Shea pitched forward. Bell wedged his shoulder under him and rose like a piston. He flipped O'Shea up and yanked down, slamming the spy to the deck with bone-shaking force. The powerful O'Shea kept hold of Bell's head, took a deep breath of air, and pulled the detective down with him into the heavier concentration of the suffocating gas. But Bell's left arm was no longer pinned between them. He slammed his elbow into O'Shea's nose, cracking bone. Still, O'Shea choked him. Still, the gouge raked at his eye. Suddenly, cold water cascaded down on the fighting men, sending fresh clouds of chlorine up from the massive battery under the deck. The submarine was healing, the river spilling through the hatch. Bell pushed out with long legs, found a foothold, and forced O'Shea's head against the bulkhead lined with hot pipes. O'Shea tried to writhe away. Bell held fast. Even sharper than the stench of chlorine was the stink of burning hair, and at last O'Shea's grip loosened. Bell pulled out of it, dodged a vicious slash of the gouge, and punched out repeatedly as waves poured in. Bell struggled to stand, kicked free of O'Shea's grasping hands, and climbed out of the hatch. He saw lights converging. Launches were setting out from the Brooklyn Navy Yard and lowering from the New Hampshire. The submarine was sinking, engine still roaring, propeller still fighting the current. A wave tumbled over the hatch and swept Bell to the back of the submarine. He kicked off from the propeller shield, just missing the blades, and was thrown behind by its wash. O'Shea climbed out of the hatch, retching from the chlorine. He dove after Bell, his face a mask of hatred. "I'll kill you!" The Holland's propeller dragged him into its spinning blades. The river current whisked his torso past Bell. The gangster's head raced after it, glaring at the detective, until the river yanked it under. The Holland submarine rolled quite suddenly on its side and slid beneath the waves. Isaac Bell thought he was next. He battled to stay afloat, but he was weakened by cold and rendered breathless by the poison gas. A wave curled over him, and his mind suddenly filled with his memory of the day he met Marion, and the floor had trembled beneath his feet. His eyes were playing tricks on him. Her thick, lustrous hair was piled atop her head. One long, narrow strand fell nearly to her waist. She looked dainty, but strong as a willow, and she was reaching for him. Something gripped his hand. He tightened his own grip and pulled himself to the surface. He looked up into the grinning face of a bearded sailor. The next Isaac Bell knew, he was sprawled on his back in the bottom of a wooden boat. Beside him lay Captain Lowell Falconer. The hero of Santiago looked as beat up as Bell felt, but his eyes were bright. "You'll be okay, Bell. They're taking us into sick bay." It hurt to talk and was hard to breathe. His throat was burning. "Better warn the salvage boys that the Holland has a live Wheeler Mark 14 still in its tube." "Still in its tube, thanks to you." The launch bumped against a dock. "What are those lights?" asked Bell. The sky was white with them. "Hull 44 is going to double shifts."
"Good."
"Good," Lowell Falconer echoed. "The most you can say for yourself is good?" Isaac Bell thought hard. Then he grinned.
"Sorry about your yacht."